thank you all for coming. A couple of weeks ago, I sent a message to every employee that put our quarterly earnings report in perspective. I'm going to review that information briefly because it will set the context for the key messages I want to share with you today. For the second quarter of the 1994 fiscal year, we reported a loss of $72 million on total sales of $3.25 billion, or about 2 cents per dollar of sales. Now, I'm not satisfied with any loss. However, this one was slightly less than what we reported the comparable quarter 1 year ago, despite a revenue decline of approximately $435 million. In fact, this marks the fifth consecutive quarter of improving year-over-year results, following 17 quarters of declining year-over-year results. If we look at the first 6 months of the year, we managed to cut our loss in half, despite a drop in revenue of $735 million. Put another way, if we had not successfully reduced our cost as we have done, our loss for the 6 months would have been greater than $750 million. And as I said, a loss of about 2 cents on the dollar, we're currently operating very near our financial break-even point, which is a critical point in our turnaround effort. We've been extremely successful in cutting and curbing expenses, and we'll continue to do that as we must. But our major emphasis now is, and will continue to be, to support our worldwide sales and services professionals so that they can increase our revenue so that we can become profitable again as quickly as possible. You know, an extensive study of companies in financial trouble, similar to ours in 1992, reveals that a successful turnaround of a company of this size is a multi-year task. It is simply unrealistic to believe that we can turn around a company of this size overnight. But we're definitely making progress by following a rational and systematic approach to transforming our company. We all know that it took us several years to get in significant trouble, and it's going to take some time to fully recover. That's the reality. It's not easy for any of us, but it is a fact. We need to remind ourselves of this so we don't become discouraged and lose sight of our attainable goal of sustained growth and profitability. We also need to remind ourselves of the reality of our situation so that we don't lose sight of the two things that are critical to our success. One, we must remain focused on achieving total customer satisfaction. It must ultimately drive everything that we do. And two, we must all work together in the same direction. You know, think about this. I cannot save your job. Your manager cannot save your job. Only our customers can ensure that you are successfully employed, or that I am. We were very clear when we began Engineering Digital's turnaround that one of the areas that was in need of attention was our sales and marketing. We knew that we had become, in large part, disconnected from our customers, had not been listening to them, and had overlooked their needs and requirements. We had ignored the demand from our customers for open systems. As part of our increased focus on the customer, we organized the company around industry business units that would concentrate on selling solutions to specific types of industries with specialized needs. Understanding customer needs as the customer interprets them was and is imperative to success in the marketplace. But we realized soon after we began implementing our industry business unit structure that we were creating too many duplications and too much confusion in the field. We had built in unintentional complications that hindered doing business and became roadblocks to growing product revenue for the company. We also succumbed to our usual temptation to revert to an internal focus rather than a customer focus. And we began to get some additional feedback from the analysts and others that we did not have enough sales and marketing focus on our products and services, our bread and butter software and hardware that drive revenue across industries. We continued losing market share. Our revenue continued to drop in our traditional core VAX VMS related businesses faster than the growth of our new businesses expanded. Quite simply, we need to correct that. In my November DVN with you, I showed you this slide to demonstrate how the industry business units would report into worldwide sales and marketing to help us reduce complications and to help me track more easily how the business was doing. The new systems business unit, which we just renamed, and which one or two members of the business press have blown out of proportion as some radical change in direction, is not any different from the core product slice of the company on this slide. What we did was segment this $6 billion piece of our business so that we can understand how we're doing in all of the various product dimensions. Now, with respect to the media, it's helpful to keep in mind that the media are in business of tracking down and reporting news. That's their job. But I've found, unfortunately, that sometimes the media do not develop an accurate understanding of the facts. The press is making a correlation between our second quarter results and the latest organizational refinement of the systems business unit. They're simply not directly related in terms of quarterly results. What is related is that over the past several quarters, we've seen that our products business was not doing well. The issue became how to get more focus on the products business to balance the industry business, and that was the genesis of the systems business unit. The systems business unit includes five product segments. These five product segments are client server software, OpenVMS, client server systems and software, Unix, Windows, NT client server systems, memory and peripheral upgrades, and network products. Our products have never been stronger across the entire spectrum of client server computing. The systems business unit has been put in place to respond quickly and thoroughly to the marketplace with these superior offerings. It will provide focus on products which are critical to digital's ongoing business success. Each product segment will have a different business model based on the objective for that segment. Now, as a company and as a culture, we seem to have done two things around the systems business unit announcement which do not help any of us at all. First, we've taken it to mean that we've given up on industries, which we have not. Approximately 55% of our sales professionals and resources worldwide remain aligned by industry. And second, we seem to have turned it into a discussion of who's in charge. We just love to do that. You know, the board and I have discussed this in great detail. This refinement of our organization is definitely not a change in direction. It just clarifies it, helps manage our business, and continues to be customer focused. The creation of the systems business unit does not signify a change in strategy. It is not about who's in charge. The senior management of the company and I made all of these decisions together after careful analysis and quite spirited debate. It is not about who has power more than someone else. It is an issue of focus on our customers. The world in which we compete is very complex with more than one dimension. It became very clear that we could not simply treat our broad array of products as a homogeneous block. This slide shows that the competition isn't doing that. Our most successful competitors are looking at different pieces of the market, horizontal slices, if you will, as opposed to a vertically integrated company. And we need to understand our revenue and our cost against these competitors. Many parts of our traditional product space now faced focused competition from companies that specialize in that relatively narrow band. The systems business unit will help us focus our product efforts and understand better how to compete in all of the areas its various pieces represent. Now, we need to have different strategies to compete successfully in different areas. However, our industry organization will continue to be a key part of our total marketing picture because they understand specific customer needs. They know how to pull together systems and solutions that customers want and need in specific industries with specialized requirements. And they're the ones who will work across the systems business unit in an integrated way. You know, as the chief information officer of a major pharmaceutical company in the United Kingdom told me when I visited him last week, one of the biggest values that digital brings to him is an improved understanding of his business and understanding how information technology can be applied to make it successful. So this is not a matter of one or the other, of product versus industry. It has nothing to do with industry focus going away or with any group or individual having any more or less power. It has everything to do with what we've committed to doing, which is turning this company around and making it profitable. Returning, refining, adjusting, whatever you want to call it, it comes down to a matter of market realities, of competitive challenges that must be met, of constantly re-examining our understanding of what being competitive means, and of cohesion and the successful balance of complementary capabilities within digital. We all have specific responsibilities in digital. Marketing needs to understand the marketplace and interpret customer needs. Engineering needs to design the products and services that our customers want. Sales, marketing, engineering, and services need to have continuous communication and linkages to ensure that the customer voice is heard and responded to by all of our infrastructure. More than ever before, this demands balance and teamwork. You know, in a traditionally engineering-driven company, as we are, engineering may perceive this as a loss of power. That would be a very mistaken perception. Engineering is still the technology expert, and we're a technology-driven company. But to be successful, technology must be defined by customer and industry needs through rational market research and knowledge. It's my job as CEO to pull these different talents and responsibilities and marketplace dimensions together in a unified direction and strategy. That's what I'm doing. As long as we speculate on changes for the sake of speculation, and as long as we obsess about who is in charge, about where the power lies, we're missing the focus on our customers, on our competition, and on our work. Now, there'll be undoubtedly more changes coming. There'll be more tune-ups and adjustments as we learn about operating in today's marketplace and as we refine our ability to meet customer needs. We've made many changes in the past 18 months. With any change of the magnitude experienced by digital, mid-course corrections are almost always inevitable. But we cannot divide ourselves in this process. We must all work together in the same direction to achieve our mutual goals. And that means all of us, the members of the strategy committee, territory management, business unit leaders, middle management in particular, and for that matter, every single employee. Each and every one of the strategy committee members, each and every one of these managers has very clear goals. And the board and I are holding each and every one responsible for meeting their specific goals. We're also holding everyone responsible for teamwork at every level and in every corner of this organization. Now, we are within striking distance of returning to profitable growth if all of us continue to focus on our work. We have a number of bright spots from the first half of fiscal 1994 that indicate our efforts are paying off. For example, we see a surging demand for our personal computers. There's been steady and continued progress in Alpha AXP workstations, networking components, and peripherals. Our storage products, particularly StorageWorks, extremely well received by the marketplace, and we have won 7 major video on demand trials, although only two have been announced. But we've won 7, 4 in the United States, 3 outside the United States. We were successful in growing our business in the Asia Pacific region. We're on track with our strategies and plans. We're making good progress in simplifying our product offerings, making it easier for the sales organization to sell, the customer to buy, and the supply and delivery channels to ensure customer satisfaction. We will be funding and measuring our global accounts on a global basis. We've made good, positive strides in turning around our relationships with distributors, value-added remarketers, and independent software vendors. We've completed the transition from a very undisciplined pricing strategy to a pricing policy that makes sense. And we are continuing to unite our focus on industry solutions and leadership product and services under the banner of Open Client Server Computing. Our very successful October 12th Open Client Server announcement has led to $1.2 billion in firm proposals for additional business. And we've already been able to close $265 million in business from that. On February 8th, we will announce the second wave in our Open Client Server initiative, with more than 200 major new software products that make it easier and more attractive for customers to move to and implement client-server computing. The announcement will highlight integrated products so that we and our partners can deliver it now. Our efforts and our results in several areas provide further evidence that we are on track and headed in the right direction. The turnaround is not as fast as we wish it could be, but our direction and focus is clear, and we are poised at this time with many things working in our favor. Unfortunately, I know from talking to you and from our notes files that morale is not good. We frequently are not pulling together as a team. Many of you are not happy, and in many cases, you're not even engaged. That doesn't surprise me. I mean, frankly, some days it's hard for me too. And there's nothing our competition prefers more than for us to be divided or weakened with internal focus. I firmly believe that we can succeed. We need to put all of our energy on doing instead of speculating and worrying. If we all work together and hold to our commitments, together we can pull ourselves out of our remaining difficulties. I wish I could stand here and tell you that there will never be another downsizing, but we are still over-resourced nearly everywhere across the globe. It comes down to a matter of what we can afford, or more properly, what our customers will pay for to support our resources. How do we size appropriately to give the best value to our customer? How do we size appropriately for the margins that we currently have, much reduced from the past? It's a different situation for different territories and locations, and management has to wrestle with these things. It's complicated. Downsizings must be accompanied by redefinition of the work or by simple elimination of work that isn't of any value to our customer. On the other hand, we must focus every single one of us on being as productive as we can so that we can grow revenue and satisfy our customers. And we need to get past our nervousness and speculation as a group if we're going to grow this business. Some of you may be aware of the fact that Digital has begun conducting focus groups throughout North America. This is a preliminary step in a company-wide survey to learn in depth how you're feeling and how we can improve our relationships with all of our employees. Your messages thus far are very clear. I want to share a sampling of what we've found. It's not always pleasant to hear. Some of you definitely feel the need to know more about what's happening within Digital. Some of you are losing faith in the credibility of the senior management. Some of you are still focused internally rather than externally. Some of you are concerned about Digital losing credibility with our customers. It's a good concern. You've used a wide variety of words and phrases to describe the culture at Digital today. Among them, stressful, paralysis, bureaucratic, intellectually stimulating, smart people, high integrity, secretive, people covering their rear ends, very ethical, political. The focus groups also identified these trends across the board. People in Digital want to make a difference. You believe in the excellence of our products and services. You truly enjoy your work for the most part, and express a high degree of responsibility to do your work well. And you care about our company and about each other. I know that I have the privilege of working for some of the best employees in any company, in any industry. Our challenge is to make sure that we capitalize on the pride and good feeling left in Digital employees worldwide. And we make that work for you as well as for the company. People are very busy, and too often management thinks, well, surely I'm too busy to spend any time talking about the company's values. In my view, that's complete nonsense. Our values, our morale, our confidence are absolutely important to our success as an enterprise, now and for the long term. I have to say that not everyone on my staff has an equal passion for Digital's values, although they're loath to say so since it's quite clear to them that I do. But they're learning. Some of them even think I'm somewhat of a nuisance when I want to talk about the people of Digital along with our core technical competencies and business strategies. That's too bad. I want you to know that morale and confidence in the company is my top priority. And we as leaders and managers are going to address that issue. That does not mean that we're going to be feeding you all some pap about how great it is. That's inconsistent with my value system. But we need open dialogues and honest sharing of information. By July of this year, every employee will have the opportunity to participate in the worldwide employee survey that we have piloted. We'll be looking for views about a range of subjects: the company, its management, your jobs, your contribution to customer success. The information will help us identify areas that we need to change and areas of strength that we need to preserve as we renew our company. Through local discussions of the survey results, managers and employees will create action plans to improve the business and the environment whenever and wherever possible. Your responses will also be mapped to our core values so that we can understand better where we are a company in actually living these values. Values are aspirational. Unfortunately, in some part of the organization, the reality does not necessarily reflect our value system. It needs work. I know that some areas of the company have already started having important conversations about core values. I also know that many of you feel that today it's risky to speak up about things that are on your mind. But if open dialogue and ongoing discussions do not happen, we will not be able to address important issues, to fix what needs to be fixed, and to preserve what is important. I encourage all of you to speak openly and constructively to help digital succeed. And in that spirit, I want to take some of your questions, try to cover what's on your minds. Give you some time to formulate those questions. I've got a few that were gathered while I was at the employee meeting in the United Kingdom at the end of January. I'll begin with some of those. By the way, the people in the UK can see if I give consistent answers. You can tell by these questions that they're quite direct from that group, so don't be bashful about asking whatever's on your mind when you get your chance. Here's a question. It says, there's a perception that Bob Palmer is no longer running the company and that Ed Lucente is actually taking over. What's the reality? That's not Ed's perception. It's not my perception. And frankly, it does a disservice to all of the other direct reports that run large pieces of our business. The reason I think some people think that is, again, because of a completely erroneous article in Business Week that was written by somebody who I apparently snubbed at some party. And the reality that we have of the six business units, each one of those is more than a $1 billion business. And everybody has a piece of what's necessary to turn the company around. I think Ed's is the largest, but services taken together between Gresh Brebeck and John Randall's a little larger. But in any event, everybody has taken on additional responsibility, and everybody's responsible. In that regard, I was quite pleased that Ed was willing to take on the additional risk and the additional responsibility of running our systems products business unit. This says, I don't know what this says. This says, major changes and substantial cuts are being made in Europe. What, if anything, is being done of a similar nature in the U.S., particularly at corporate? Well, the reason that there is that perception, of course, is that we have just announced a downsizing in the next 6 months in Europe. It's quite substantial, between 5,500 and 6,000 people, as I recall. But we have actually been downsizing during the time that I was running manufacturing and since becoming CEO. Across the globe, and relatively uniform. We were a little slower to get around to Europe because we didn't have permanent leadership in Europe until very recently. And so it feels a little harder in Europe right now, but basically they're playing catch up with the rest of the company. I want to ask see what questions are on your mind rather than go through all of these since I've answered these before, but that gives you some idea of the type of questions. Do we have some questions?
Hi, Bob. This is Sue Ruther in property. Mm-hmm. In the property organization, we have been aggressively decreasing our portfolio in relationship to the downsizing of employees. With new senior management on board, their expectations are for higher space standards, including far more space, square footage for their individual offices, which may be appropriate for them, but it is setting a precedent for the rest of the company. Can you give us some guidance on how we should deal with this issue?
Yeah, we should build smaller offices. You know, we don't need big shot offices for me or for my staff. We don't need that. Our company is one that has striven over the years, sometimes successfully, sometimes not, to maintain a minimum of social distance between the different levels of management in the company. And that's the way we need to keep it here at Digital. You know, we are all on the same team, and we are all valuable employees of this team. We don't want to create unnecessary accoutrements, you might say, to the different job levels. It is important in some of our sales and marketing areas in particular that we have a reasonably nice office to invite our customers into. I mean, our competition does, and you can't have some shabby office talking to customers. But on the whole, we don't need any palatial estates in our company or any special privileges. Other questions? Don't be bashful out there. You got to ask some question, I'll just start talking at random.
Hi,
yes.
I'm Sharon Gallagher, and I'm also from the property organization. But I have a question about how we as headquarters staff can help in the customer outreach program. Mm-hmm. For example, we ourselves become customers, whether we're buying products for our home use or whether we're using it here in the office. And there are often times when we have a hard time dealing with the purchasing process, calling the right places, getting the right information about what it is we need to get. And it creates frustration for us, but mm-hmm. then when you extrapolate that out to the customer base at large, you wonder how we can continue being successful.
Well, Sharon, I think that's a very good observation. We can't continue being successful with that kind of a structure. And as you know, one of the largest activities we have going on in the country today is what we call the customer value chain reengineering effort. A large part of it is at that problem. We have customers out there that want somebody to show up from Digital and take an order. Having taken the order, they want somehow the stuff to be shipped. It seems like a very reasonable expectation. I've had customers tell me that they were unable to successfully complete that transaction because we were so complex. So we're redesigning the whole thing, and this is among the most urgent problems we have in the company. As a matter of fact, in the second quarter, I was disappointed in the results, let's be clear. I was disappointed. But we had about $240 million of orders left that we didn't ship. You know, so we've had supply problems, we've had order admin problems, we've had follow-up problems. We've got to fix this stuff. This is not a hobby. This is a business. We need to connect with our customers so we can make an exchange of our products and services for their money. It's pretty simple. And we've made it very hard. So we're trying to fix that problem. By the way, while I'm rattling on here, that property management group has done an excellent job of continuing to dispose of excess facilities that we have over the globe. Sometimes don't get a lot of credit publicly, but since two people asked the question, it kind of stirred my mind to say, hey, thank you. It's good work. We've been able to sell facilities in a very different, difficult market on a worldwide basis. And for the most part, we've actually netted a slight gain in the facilities that we've sold. Other questions?
Hi, Bob. My name's Carmelina, and I'm representing the law department. My question for you is, are you concerned about the effect the press Digital has received through print, radio, and recently from our business analysts? Are you concerned about the effect this has on the company and our customers? And do you feel that we may work towards softening our image through this medium?
Well, I do get concerned about it. Usually I'm concerned about inaccuracies. Like, I don't care for these articles where our communications department has provided the author with the facts, and the person just chooses to ignore the facts because they don't support the story that they've already written. You know, so that I don't like that much. And to be honest, I haven't had much of that. I've been in the job now 16 months, and I'd say with the exception of one or two articles just recently, I've been very well treated by the media. It's been very fair. I mean, they don't always print great stuff because we're obviously slugging through some difficult times, and I don't mind that. I do mind when there's distortions, inaccuracies, complete misrepresentations, because it does cause concern in the marketplace, and it causes me to waste a lot of my cycles putting that kind of nonsense down. But again, the best thing we can do in the near term is get some profitability in the company. Relative to where we were, we have had a remarkable progress. You know, if you think about before I took on this job, we'd lost $3.9 billion. Since then, in the five quarters, $3.9 billion. In the five quarters, I think we've lost about $410 million, or about 11% of the previous. Now, I'm not happy about losses, You know, but from where we were and the path we were on, this has been a remarkable turnaround as a result of all the hard work you've done. That's what's happened. We had one quarter where we didn't do that much better than the previous quarter, although on an earnings per share basis, it was a 7% improvement. On a profit after tax, about a 2% improvement. It was primarily because the revenue in our traditional VAX VMS-based products and services is declining faster than the revenue from our new Alpha stuff can fill it in. Actually, Alpha is growing fast, but from a small base. And so that's just, what else can you do? That is a transition that we have to go through. We're going from VAX VMS, that area, that 32-bit architecture, to a new Alpha AXP 64-bit architecture. That transition is about a four-year transition anytime anybody makes a transition of that type. That's a historical data. So this isn't any surprise. And in point of fact, we did a little better. Five quarters in a row better, after 17 every quarter worse. So fundamentally, I do not have a problem with my board of directors. I do not have a problem with my conscience. I do have a problem in terms of, you know, feeling positive every day, because I know there's a lot of pain out there as we restructure this company. But there is no alternative. There is no alternative. We've got to get competitive, and we've got to grow our business. And that's what we're doing. Yes?
My name is Ellen Lee, and I'm with the M&L IM&T organization. My question is twofold, regarding Q2 spending, mm-hmm. And how it is going, if it is going to be continued in Q3. We're seeing more layoffs. I've survived a layoff. It's disintegrating employee morale, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. and there were even requests to take time off without pay during Q2, and a lot of us heard a lot of rumors, which I'm hoping you will refute. Mm-hmm. One is that there were 17% bonuses given to vice presidents in Q2.
In the second quarter?
In the second quarter, that's what I heard.
They must have given them to each other. This person didn't approve any bonuses for anybody during the second quarter. You have to earn your bonus by the end of the year. And, you know, in order to earn a bonus, there are a lot of people in our company that are eligible for some kind of bonus. You have to earn it, which is the way it should be. Just right now, our management team isn't earning any bonus. If we don't improve our performance between now and the end of the year, there won't be any bonus for the executives, including the speaker here, nor should there be. On the other hand, we do have sales professionals whose part of their salary is a commission. Obviously, we're paying that, and there might be some confusion about that.
Okay. We're hearing other things of other perks for our high-level executives. And I was just wondering if you can help us understand how compensation guidelines are derived for senior-level mm-hmm. management versus
sure.
other employees.
Actually, I can absolutely answer that question. Compensation for all employees is derived by external survey. And we go to external companies that are in the salary compensation business, and we look at what is reasonable for different levels in our company versus our competitors. That's the same as for the officers. The difference in the case of the officers is that the board of directors specifically has to approve any kind of perk, salary increase, benefit, or whatever for the officers. And for those that are in the top five, you have to publish it as well, all of which I think is healthy. I mean, it should be that way. This is not our money. It's determined by the shareholders. And that fundamentally, the board of directors has that responsibility. I have the direct responsibility below that level to make sure that the compensation is fair. And we're trying to move from a system that kind of paid everybody, whether you contributed or not, to a system that pays for contribution, a meritocracy. And we're going to take multiple years to do that because we haven't had that in our company. My view is people should be paid on the basis of their contribution, on their accomplishment, on the skills that they bring to satisfying our customers' needs, not on how long they've been here, not on their gender, not on their race, not on their sexual preference or religion. Those things are interesting, but they're not important in terms of performance. What counts is, what is your ability, what is my ability to contribute to the success of the enterprise? And every one of these salaries and benefits should stand up to public scrutiny vis-a-vis our competitors. And I can assure you that they do. The numbers are large for senior levels in a company of this size, no question about that. The numbers are large. And throughout the company, they're reasonable. At the top, they're large and reasonable when compared to the competition. I can't defend the whole system. You know, I can't do that. but I can assure you that the way it's done is professional and relies on external data.
Good morning, Bob. Mm-hmm. My name is Fran Bastian, and I work in the U.S. Benefit Organization. Mm-hmm. Our group has responsibility for managing the benefit programs offered to the U.S. employees. And I would say that, at least from this employee's opinion, that we're giving 150% towards the company. And I think, at least from my opinion, what would make me feel really good as an employee with regard to some of the things that you've spoken about is if somehow we could see the stock price reversing the trend that we've seen. To me, that would seem to be an indication that the things that you spoke about mm-hmm. are really taking effect and that we are satisfying the customers.
I think that's a very good observation. You're exactly right. That at one level, that is kind of your report card as a company, is what is the market value of your company. And right now, our stock is at a 52-week low, or very near it. That reflects the fact that the analysts are concerned that this decline in the VAX VMS systems business is going to continue faster than we can bring up the alpha AXP revenues. And analysts that trade this stuff, write about it, are very short term. They look out 3 months, 6 months. This is not an investing kind of thing for the most part. We have some people that own our stock that hang on for the long term. There's an inertia in either direction. Things tend to overshoot on the upside or overshoot on the downside. Right now, they're overshooting on the downside because analysts are concerned that we are not going to be able to stop this revenue decline. They have a reason to be concerned. I'm concerned. And the senior management of the company needs to be concerned. And that was largely why we created that Systems Products business unit, so that we could focus on slowing that decline. And we recognize that our VAX VMS business is somewhat different from our Windows NT or Unix businesses. And so we wanted to make those strategies different. We need to slow that decline. But you're right, you could look at the stock price and say, gee, relative to where we've been, how is that doing? Right now we're bumping along the bottom there. It also reflects a concern on the part of the analysts that if the revenue doesn't recover, it means that we will have to take a large restructuring reserve, which reduces the book value of the company. And that's what many of them are speculating about. I think it's too early to say on something like that, and I'm not making any forecasts, but I'm pretty cognizant of why they're concerned. So we all have the same concern here. Your number one job, though, is not, surprisingly, shareholder value in that order. Your number one job is customer satisfaction. If you satisfy your customers, the earnings and the sales growth will follow, and the shareholder value will follow that. And so my focus really is on how do we satisfy our customers with superior products and service? How do we get the revenue and the earnings returned? Then the share price will follow. That's the objective. Other questions? Yes.
Good morning. My name is Jim Schumann. There's been a lot of speculation about divisionalizing the company or spinning off pieces into wholly owned subsidiaries. Mm-hmm. Could you comment on that, please?
The idea was, if you remember that stack I had on the chart that talked about a vertically integrated computer company, which Digital has been for all of its career, really, and the delayering, if you will, of pieces of that. That is, the electronics is largely now replaced by microchips, and there are a few companies in the microchip business at the very bottom of that stack. Up a notch is the operating systems, companies like Microsoft and Novell. Those companies are in that horizontal piece. You go up another piece, there might be databases like Oracle and Sybase, and so on through the entire stack. The important thing is if you look in those horizontal slices, what you find is that even though our total investment's very large, our investment within any particular slice is not as large as the leading competitors in that slice. That means, for the most part, that you have a failing organizational strategy. Like, we're a smart bunch of people here, smart engineering, smart everywhere, but so are our competitors. And if they're more focused and spending more money, the probability is they will be successful and we will not. So we have to organize our business and delayer it a little bit, not totally. A good example would be, say, our personal computer business. Pull the personal computer business out, set it up as essentially a standalone division. That business is growing at double-digit rates, nearly 100% per year. Is astounding, really, the market after our three or four previous miserable attempts to penetrate the PC market. New leadership and Enrico Pessitori being very successful. You may have seen that our new Digital XL series was the first PC that was upgradable by just changing a little daughter card inside the PC from a 486-based machine to a faster 486, to a Pentium chip, or to an Alpha chip. So the customer buys the box, and all they have to do to upgrade it and keep it powerful and current is change this one little card in there. That was a best of show at several of the PC shows, and we basically could have shipped more product in Q2. We were essentially sold out, you know, in terms of our product. So that shows it. Take it aside, focus on it. Storage is another good example I mentioned in my speech. You know, our storage in 3 or 4 years ago, we were headed right out of business building only big disks and ignoring the realities of the marketplace. Charlie Crist came in, turned that completely around. Our business is growing like crazy. We're at a run right now of something like 1 million disks a year. Can you imagine 1 million kind of disks? That's the run rate, and increasing. Again, we cannot meet the demand for those products. And the video on demand wins that we've had, 4 in the United States, 3 outside the United States, major big telecommunications companies choosing digital to partner with for their video on demand platform that was designed and developed within Charlie Crist's organization. You know, so storage is a separate division, got a separate business model, like PCs. You look at digital consulting, another. The consulting business to go in and help customers with solutions is a different business than the systems business. So you need a different business model. So that's why we're setting these things up. Now, the other part of your question, though, how about spinning them out and having them sold or something? There's no current plan to do that, but you have that opportunity if you set them up so that they're essentially independent. Oh, also, if you're the chief executive, you have a much better chance of measuring each vice president's performance if they have a well-contained unit. The way it was when I took on the job, there was one thing all came together as a big mush ball. And if you tried to figure out who's making money or losing money, there's nobody inside the company that could agree on that, because it really depended on how much did you allocate to this person or that person of some kind of corporate load on the business. Today, we can absolutely understand which of our business units is making money and growing, how much cash is it using, how many assets are employed, how many people are employed in the thing. All of the things you need to know, is it a business? Then you can decide, is that a business I want to be in? Or is that a business that digital should let somebody else be in, or whatever? So we're making tremendous progress on getting this in a way that you can analyze it and manage it and run it. And at the same time, that's largely driving a lot of the downsizing, because when you get into a business that has gross profit margins at 20%, say, like the PC business, you know right away you can't carry a lot of overhead. It will not carry it. And so as we keep looking at those different business models, we have the opportunity to improve our overall performance. By the way, in that quarter just ended, of the 6 business units, 4 business units were doing better than their operating plan on profit. 4 business units. You know, when I talked to the board of directors at Q2, I wasn't feeling all that good, because I really had expected we had a chance to break even in Q2, and we did, if we'd shipped what we had orders for. That's not all manufacturing's fault, by the way. A lot of times the orders came in too late to ship. And in most cases, they were not close to the forecast of the demand, was not that close in terms of mix to what actually was ordered. So it's a generally shared problem. But anyway, I wasn't feeling that great about it. And I was talking to the board about, well, but we did have 4 business units that made their profit goal. The board was ecstatic. You know, they said 4 is more than they've ever seen in the company before actually make their achievement since our, you know, halcyon days in 1988. And so it's progress. Now, the other 2, they're not quite making their profit at this point. One expects to by the end of the year. The other one doesn't have a chance, and so the issue there is, how can you minimize the losses in that one before making it? And that's, by the way, only one of those 4 is making the revenue plan. So the others are saying, gee, my revenue's not coming in as planned. I can manage this business to get the profit. And that is what management's about. So a lot to be positive about. Other questions?
Yeah, Bob, my name's Pete Navarro with the U.S. acquisition IM&T. Mm-hmm. Over the past year or so, we've seen quite a few people transitioned out of the company, and at the same time, a number of VPs have been hired. Mm-hmm. Do you see that streamlining upper-level management would help not only to eliminate some overhead, but also help cut the bureaucracy in the company today?
Actually, that may be a perception. It's not an accurate perception. The company had, at one time since I've been in the company, some 45 officers. Today we have less than 26, okay? Of the 26 we have, more than 50%, I think it's 55% accurately, are new people. New people. Either people promoted from within or hired from the outside. So the reason people might have that perception is we have these announcements and they say, gee, they hired somebody. Looks like a lot of vice presidents. This is a huge company. You know, today at about 93,000 people, and you need some management structure. But it's like I say, it's 25 or 26 as opposed to 44 is the real deal. Oh, the other thing I look at, although you didn't ask it, is as we do the downsizings, I asked this Dick Farhar, who's head of all the personnel, to get the data by job level. You know, I want to avoid this thing where what happens is all of the workers in the field get laid off and all of the management stays, you know, which is the traditional thing that happens in downsizings. And we have the data by job level. And Dick assures me that it's relatively uniform. The largest number in percentage terms are exactly the vice presidents. It turns out that we have had a departure from our company of more vice presidents on a percentage level than any other category. And, you know, it was necessary in my view. Other questions?
Good morning, Bob. Good morning, Bob. Karen Dunn, Compute Network Services. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of necessary focus on our income statement, but shifting for a moment with the downgrading of our debt and the debt registration, can you talk about your feelings on the trend in our balance sheet?
Yes. The digital continues. I'm glad you asked that question. Digital continues to have one of the stronger balance sheets in the industry. That is to say, the amount of debt we have is approximately $1 billion long-term debt. We have $1.1 billion of cash on hand at the end of the quarter just ended. So it's very strong. In terms of the quarter, by the way, we had positive cash flow in operations. Just barely, but it was positive. It's very important that you maintain enough cash, and so what we did was have this registration of preferred stock, which would enable us to raise several hundred million dollars, up to $1 billion if we need it, as working capital to run the business. But it's our intent to continue to maintain the balance sheet quite strong. And that is a chief focus of the chief financial officer, myself, and of course the controller of the company. So Bill Stoyle, Vin Malarkey, and I primarily focused on that. Now the group that's been spending all of their attention to it is our treasury group under Eileen Jacobs, and she's done, and her team, just an outstanding job. You know, it was remarkable that we were able to get shareholder approval for that preferred stock offering. They managed that. They've managed all of our debt requirements very effectively. So we've got a quite competent treasury function in this company, and that's very important. So the company is strong on the balance sheet, have plenty of cash to run the business, but on the other hand, our margins are continuing to decline. You know, if you looked at it, let's talk about the business in kind of an overview. During the last year, margins continued to decline rather dramatically. In fact, in the quarter just ended, the gross profit margin was down 23%. So that means you had 23% less dollars as a function of sales to pay for all of the stuff we needed. In addition to that, the mix of the products are such that it's moving away from the high profit margin, big machines and big systems, to the desktop and desk side type products. So this isn't going to reverse itself in my view. We have to learn to live on less profit margin in order to maintain the strength of our balance sheet. And all of these things play together. Now, it happens that, as I said in my speech, if we had not reduced research and engineering by some 18%, if we had not reduced our selling, general, and administrative overhead expenses by 23%, then instead of having this $150 million or so loss in the first two quarters, we would have had a loss of $750 million or more. That will destroy your balance sheet. And so we can't allow that to happen. We've got to maintain two things there. Don't run out of cash. If you're running a hamburger stand, don't run out of cash. So if you're running a company this size, that's your number one requirement. Do not run out of cash. And you want to preserve a strong balance sheet. This is not that complicated, really. It's surprising, though, how many companies lose sight of that. Yes?
Good morning, Bob. I'm Dan Calico from IM&T. I wanted to ask you about an opportunity. We've heard a lot about the internet and how it's turning into the international information infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you could give us some of your thinking about how we might increase our already large current participation in that movement, not only internally, but externally through consulting services, marketing, engineering,
this is
and sales.
This is a very big area of opportunity for digital. As I mentioned, right now, digital is by far and away the leading vendor in terms of video on demand server wins. I wish I could announce some of these things, but the customers are quite clear that they want not to announce it until they're ready. So I'm told that one of them, a major one, is going to be announced this month in New York. I think I'm supposed to participate. We're going to have several others. This is where we have provided the storage platform, the networking, some software, some computing in the case of Alpha AXP, the various architecture to enable a provider of video on demand to have an efficient way to do it. Some of them are trials. Some of them are full-blown rollouts that go on for multiple years and represent tens of millions of dollars in the first phase for digital. This is an example of good selling, good marketing, understanding the marketing, good engineering, and digital participating in that phase. But there are many other phases we could participate in. You know, at the, on the user end in the home, you're going to need some kind of relatively serious computing in order to provide the full attributes that people envision for the national information infrastructure. The Alpha architecture would be ideal for that if we could drive the cost down. So there's many opportunities there. There are opportunities in wireless and mobile communications related or computing related to this national information infrastructure. Now what we have is we have several people within the senior leadership team working on a strategy, has been going on for a long time, both in our direct, my direct reports, as well as with our strategy group, that's an ad hoc group that works for Lucia Quinn, looking at where are the opportunities for our technology in this unfolding national information infrastructure. And there are many of them. And as a matter of absolute fact, we're reviewing that next week in terms of, it's kind of a check-in, we've reviewed it several times, kind of a check-in on the next phase of the work. And we're going to be looking at some proposals from the Communication, Education, and Media Group, from Paul Kozlowski's group, say, here are some opportunities that we'd like to go after in addition to the ones we've already won. I think this is going to be a good opportunity for digital. It's not the only opportunity, but it's one that we have so much talent and technology on, we definitely should get some growth out of that part of the market. So thank you. Other questions?
Good morning, Bob. My name is Bob Figueredo from the Design and Facilities Organization. Mm-hmm. I have a product strategy question.
Okay.
Recently, IBM, Motorola, and I believe Apple announced an alliance whereby they're producing this PowerPC.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean for us in terms of our overall Alpha strategy?
It means that the PowerPC is a viable competitor against the Alpha architecture. Now, it happens that in most of these things, there's a good deal more hype than reality. In this particular case, the PowerPC didn't have any applications today. We'll be running, though, the Macintosh 7 operating system for Apple, which is a big deal. The reason that they're getting so much play is because of that relationship, the IBM volumes are very low. They've only got one product that's even announced on it yet, and they don't have an operating system for it. But because the volumes for Alpha are so high, for Apple are so high that people say, gee, that should be a successful operating environment. That should work. PowerPC should have some volume. They're worried about Alpha. Well, we have some volume in order for our cost to be competitive. Next week, if not in fact this week, I hope to announce a solution to some of that question. The question really is, how can you afford the semiconductor investment necessary to stay on the absolute leading edge like Alpha is vis-a-vis PowerPC? If you compare the two products, Alpha today runs multiple operating systems, has been shipping for 2 years, and it has twice the performance at the same cost. So that's the kind of the short form of the comparison. All we need now are some larger customer wins or some other way to reduce our cost in semis. Other questions?
Bob, Steve Smith in finance.
Mm-hmm.
Part of my work is employee communications in finance, and we had a bunch of questions prepared for Bill Stoyle and Vin Malarkey in a employee communications session last week. I'll share a couple of those with you, having to do with marketing and customer satisfaction. Where is our advertising strategy?
Mm-hmm.
Customer satisfaction appears to be declining. Where is our marketing? We need some public image building
mm-hmm.
for both customers and employees. Why not put Bob Palmer on TV?
Well, right now I am on TV, I think, but fundamentally, around some of those questions, the Bob Palmer on TV thing is very unlikely to happen because I'm not that much of an egoist. You know, I don't want to be up in front making like some of the people in the auto industry may come to mind about various, you know, big shots and how they're single-handedly doing something dramatically remarkable. The reality is the CEO can't do anything by himself, just zero. All you can actually do is try to create an environment where everybody else can do something. And so I'm always a little cautious about pictures on the front of magazines or TV or stuff like that, for me personally. It just doesn't fit my personality. On the other issue, though, as far as outselling is concerned, I just got back from an 8 or 9 day trip in Europe, 3 or 4 customer visits a day, working on into the evening with customers. I do enjoy that. I mean, it's very tiring, but you do help to get an idea of what customers want, where you're doing well, where you're not doing so well, and you occasionally help spur a sale along while you're at it. So we need to do some of that. Around the advertising question, we ran into a problem there, actually, because we didn't very cleverly set that up. We said, here's an advertising budget, some total number, and we left it to the advertising department to figure out how to allocate it. That's obviously not a good strategy. We recognized that last, though, October, November, and we changed that. It was unfair to Charlie Howland running all the media. It was unfair to our advertising people, and it was not effective anyway.
Please flip this cassette over and rewind to the beginning of side B for the rest of the seminar.